Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. On Women's Finals Day, it has been and gone, and we are here to look back at it. Myself, David Law from BBC Radio 5 Live, joined, of course, by The Telegraph's Simon Briggs, tennis correspondent extraordinaire. Catherine Whittaker will be along shortly. But Simon, that was a really good final, first things first.
It was terrific, yeah. I think Serena played at her best. Kerber played at her best and couldn't really lay a finger on her, but made it match competitive. So it was 81 minutes, but I don't think anyone would be suggesting that they wanted their money back after that, because it was really top entertainment. In fact, I think the men's final will have its work cut out to live up to that tomorrow.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point, isn't it? But what I did notice, at the same time as it was excellent entertainment and highly competitive, I think at one stage towards the end of that second set, I tweeted that this is a contender potentially for match of the year if it carries on. Suddenly, two games later, four massive serves, it's over. And that was Serena at her best.
Yeah, there was no particular sort of dramatic narrative, but it was just very, very good quality. And because Kerber held a lot of service games, it meant that it wasn't, it wasn't a walkover by any means. It's just that I thought a couple of times that she had Serena looking anxious. There was a couple of forehands in the first set just dumped in the net. I thought maybe she's going to wake those demons, going to bring back the memories of the three Grand Slams since her last win here last year. But I guess Serena was just feeling so good that she managed to keep the lid on all that and never really got behind in any of the sets. I mean, I think Kerber was serving first and second set, wasn't she? She was never in trouble, really. And if there was a moment that you do remember from the match, it would be Kerber getting break point and then seeing first the ace out wide and holding out her hands and looking at her box in frustration. And then the next point, ace down the middle, 124 miles an hour, fastest serve of the tournament, the best serve of the tournament. It was just an absolute rocket.
All the way through the tournament, it has felt like this is a different Serena Williams. We touched on it yesterday. Just in terms of her demeanour, it hasn't seemed as though there were any doubts there whatsoever. She seems like the Serena Williams that was here probably a year ago, rather than the one that was clearly weighed down at the US Open and to a, maybe a lesser extent, at the other two Grand Slam tournaments this year. But this was Serena shorn of all that, it seemed to me.
Yeah, I mean, one of the questions that it raises is not so much how did Serena win Wimbledon, but how does she not win the last three Grand Slams, when you see that when she is on, she still is a class too good for the competition. I don't know if Muguruza could possibly have lived with her today at her very best, but I doubt it. I don't think anyone ever could have played and beaten Serena today. I mean, that was absolutely a defining performance, an epoch-making performance, really. I mean, I guess we won't remember it as an amazing final because it was a straight set, but anyone who saw the quality of it, you just think that, you know, if she never plays better than that, then that's extraordinary in its own right.
Indeed. No, it was extraordinary in its own right. And Angelique Kerber, as Catherine Whittaker joins us here on the Tennis Podcast, Angelique Kerber, as you said, pretty much did all that she could, played really well. And I think that, I don't know whether I'd say that this is going to be a rivalry going forward necessarily, because I think if Serena Williams plays her very best stuff, there is nobody to come close. But Angelique Kerber does go out onto the court just ready for battle every single time, doesn't she?
Yeah, I think she's been relatively consistent. She said that she got over anxious during the French Open as a result of all the pressure she was putting on herself to live up to Australia. But if she's now maybe over that hump, she understood today that she came off with no regrets. I think it reminded me a bit of that semi-final in the French Open when Stan Wawrinka came into the interview room looking quite happy after having lost to Andy Murray, because Andy played such a great match against him, and it was a bit like that today. You know, you really couldn't berate yourself for losing after you produced a performance like that, and she looked quite content, and I think that'll be good for her going forward. And yeah, she will hopefully put up more strong resistance to Serena. Obviously, if Serena gets out of her own way mentally, then she can keep on steamrolling everybody. But there is also the thing about, you know, physical structural integrity. She was struggling with her knees at the US Open last year, as Patrick Mouratoglou told us later. She probably wasn't in the best tip-top condition in Australia, hadn't played enough matches. So now, with the Olympics coming up and then the US Open, very well placed to run through the second half of this season.
Simon Briggs has got to go off and write huge articles right now, but just before he goes, before he slips through that door, he's trying to get away right now. I want to know who's going to win this final tomorrow and why and how many sets and all that.
I said Murray at the beginning of the tournament. I always say Murray, and I can't really change my mind now that he's playing a first-time finalist. That would be illogical, wouldn't it? So I'll say Murray in four.
Murray in four. Simon Briggs of The Telegraph. Off he goes. Read all about it in The Telegraph tomorrow and on the website. Catherine Whittaker been waiting patiently. Catherine, been touching there with Simon on the quality of the match, which was high, but ultimately the devastating performance of Serena Williams and the demeanour, which was back to, well, vintage Serena, really. And I don't mind who wins these finals. I really like Angelique Kerber, but I think it's been really uplifting to see the way Serena Williams has dealt with it, with all of this, and produced her very best again.
It has been immensely uplifting. I found the sight of her winning today and holding up the 22 on her fingers quite inspirational, really. I think she's not necessarily the most relatable person in sense. She's walking right past us. I feel I can't keep on talking about her while she's right there.
She's walking and she's striding. She's surrounded by bodyguards and her agent, Jill Smoller, and she's reading maybe she's reading the stats of the match. I don't know. Maybe she's looking through the history books and having a look at the Grand Slam titles she's won. Well, off she goes around the corner into the press conference, which will be absolutely packed to the rafters, because everybody wants to hear all about it.
What I was going to say was, she's in many ways not the most relatable human being. I mean, she's obviously not somebody that, you know, I'm
glad you said that out of a rear shot. I'd have run a mile, I tell you.
That, you know, I could see myself going down the pub and having a drink with. But in many ways, I think, well, in particularly revealed in that documentary, she is quite a relatable human being. She does feel anxiety and stress as much as the rest of us. Probably more so, given the circumstances. Probably more so, definitely more so. But even aside from the circumstances, and she is completely human. Her having lost in these, well, of course, I mean, the biggest display of her humanity was in the US Open semi-final last year, of course. And to know everything it takes in more intimate detail now to get her to this point makes it all the more uplifting. And I have a lot of time for Angelique Kerber as well. I think she's fantastic. I wouldn't have been disappointed to see her win today, but I do think this is the best outcome. I think for tennis, this is fantastic. She deserves to have her name in the history books. I think she's going to win the 23rd in the US Open. I might retract my prediction that she will stop there, but I'm sticking with my prediction that she'll win the 23rd at the US Open, and she will be the undisputed greatest of all time. No one will be able to argue in that with that. And she's just awesome, isn't she? She's just awesome.
She is. Well said. The other thing that I really enjoyed, both in this final and the one at the Australian Open, was the sportsmanship at the end by both players in defeat. Both of them were very generous and seemed to be genuinely pleased for the other one. Obviously, Angelique Kerber was in tears at the end in her interview with Sue Barker, understandably so. But I just like to see that. I mean, although I like aggro, as you know, it's more that kind of boxing aggro where I'd like to see, you know, attitude at the start, stare downs, vicious competition, and then respect, mutual respect at the end.
Well, then this was the match for you, because there couldn't have been a greater contrast between their sort of interaction at the net at the beginning of the match for the coin toss and the photo that they have to take, where they have to take that photo where they're standing together at the net. But it was like Serena Williams' upper body was leaning into the photo, but her lower body couldn't have been further away. She was trying to edge out of that shot as much as she could, and there was no eye contact. Her eyes were on the, you know, probably on the trophy back in the locker room, or just outside the locker room at the entrance to the court. And then at the end of the match, all of that mutual, more than respect, I mean obviously there's the respect, but warmth and when I say friendship, I don't necessarily mean friendship in terms of, I don't think they go down the pub together either, but you know, as much friendship perhaps as you can have in those circumstances. So yeah, if you like a bit of intensity and spice during the match, but deep warmth and respect after it, this was your ideal match, David.
Yeah, I'm going to go and get the tape of that one. Do they still do tapes? They don't do tapes anymore. Well, there's lots of action and chat down here below, because all the journalists are having a little chat in the background, led by Barry Flatman, our good colleague. There's a junior singles press conference about to start. Oh, incidentally, I saw that on court number one. Very talented young 15-year-old who I think we're going to hear a lot more about.
Yeah, Anastasia Potapova, who needed 7 match points in order to reach victory in the girls' singles. And 2 of those, she sunk to her knees thinking she'd won it, only for Hawkeye to overrule the call. The exact same line, the service line on the ad court, that poor line judge, I mean, to be fair, he or she didn't have their best day. She celebrated victory 3 times in that match. And there was another fabulous display of sportsmanship, because she and her opponent, Stremska, and something like
well
that.
Well pronounced.
Yeah, thanks. They did a victory lap of the court together. It was lovely. Nice. It was really nice.
Yeah, it was very nice. I saw that too. I also saw Heather Watson victorious and into her first ever Grand Slam final in the mixed doubles alongside Henry Kontinen, and they came back from 4-2 down in the first set to win. What I love about the doubles, particularly the mixed doubles, is just everybody plays with a smile on their face. You know, it does remind you that it's only a game, doesn't it?
Yeah, Heather Watson was beaming throughout, but beaming in particularly after, I think it was actually a double fault handed them the match there.
I love it when someone double faults on match point against me. It's my favourite way to win.
Happens.
It's my only way to win.
She's absolutely beaming. It reminded me of, I've only seen her smile that broadly. She is a smiler, to be fair, but the last time I remember her smiling that broadly was when she came into press after her first round victory in Paris, having confirmed her qualification for the Olympics, and she just, it was like the muscles in her face couldn't not smile. You could have told her a dog had died, and you know, the muscles just wouldn't have.
That's not quite true, Catherine. You know, you and your dogs.
No, but it looked like it was just reflex, that she was just so deeply happy, and it looked the same today. I mean, it's really good for her in terms of, I suppose it's not particularly dignified to look at it in this way, but.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You do, I mean, in terms of her profile and so on in this country, I mean, look what it did for Jamie Murray for a short time. Obviously, what he's achieved now in his own right in doubles has eclipsed what he did in that mixed doubles in 2007. But still, it would be quite a big deal for Heather Watson.
Oh, it's a big deal, yeah. I think it's a very big deal. It's also, and this isn't another dignified way to look at it either, she's also covered that fine.
She's what?
No, that fine for smashing a racket into the turf, like 12 grand or something. That's covered. She's all right now.
Yeah, she's doing her very best to make everyone forget about that, isn't she? Not you, though, David, not you.
No, you're not getting out of it that easy. No, I actually think she was a bit unlucky with that one, to be quite honest, but there we are. Men's fine.
You can't have it both ways, David. You can't promote the aggro and then give people a hard time and they get a fine.
No, that's right. Do away with fines, I say. Anything goes. No holds barred tennis. That's my, you know, like wrestling. Maybe get the chairs out. No, I don't want to hit people with chairs. Catherine, men's singles final tomorrow. What's going to happen?
I think Andy Murray's going to win it. I think I quite like Richard Krajicek's prediction that he could win the first set quite easily due to Raonic being slightly overawed by the occasion, but then he'll end up in a bit more of a fight. I can't decide between three or four sets. I think if it is three sets, there'll be three decent sets. I don't expect any kind of a whitewash, but I do think it will be very definitely an Andy Murray victory.
Much as I respect 1996 Wimbledon champion Richard Krajicek, and to a slightly lesser degree yourself, but I do respect you quite a lot, I think the first set of the final is going to be excruciatingly close, personally. I think it is going to be a tiebreak. I think it'll be a little bit like Queens, with both players playing well. It'll be tense. And I think Milos Raonic might win it again.
Do you really think
set.
That?
The first set. Not the match. I think it'll still be ultimately won by Andy Murray. But I think they're going to split the first two sets.
Yeah, I mean, I could certainly see that as a scenario. The only thing I feel really strongly about is that Andy Murray's going to win it. And I suppose I feel quite strongly that it won't be five sets. But other than that, I definitely see that as a very real scenario that could play out. Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with you there.
Look on your face is like, oh God, I've got to agree with you.
I can't say too much because it's embargoed till tomorrow, but let's just say someone from Live at Wimbledon today had as painful an experience trying to get blood out of the stone that is Ivan Lendl as I did at Queen's. He is not giving anything away ahead of that match.
Excellent. I should actually say, everybody, I have just as much respect for Catherine as I do for Richard Krajicek, rather more than I have for myself, but anyway.
In very different ways, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. Now, so this final tomorrow, if Andy Murray wins it, it's occurred to me, I mean, the it's still a massive gap between him and Djokovic, but if he were to win this final, I mean, there's 5,000 points between them. You know, he'll have reached three Grand Slam finals in a row. And I just wonder whether... I wonder what next. I wonder what he'll do with the Davis Cup. I wonder what he'll do with the Olympics. I wonder what he'll do with the US Open, because the world number one ranking would suddenly feel... Not within his grasp, because Djokovic is miles away still. But he's playing that level now, isn't he? He's playing almost Djokovic tennis now.
Well, you win the number one ranking week in, week out, don't you? If you decide that that's your next big goal, you have to be looking to, you know, going to Toronto. Maybe not. He said, if I'm fit, I'll play Davis Cup. Now, I suppose there is the opt-out of perhaps you can classify fatigue as lack of fitness. So perhaps he does have an opt-out there. But the fact is, he said, if I'm fit, I'll play.
I think fatigue is one that would be fair enough myself, just because, I mean, it must take so much out of them, reaching these finals. And I remember last year, remember that Davis Cup tie in Britain at Queen's? And was it the final day or was it the first day that he was, I think it was final day, wasn't it, when he was just running on empty against Gilles Simon? And that was with a couple of extra days in hand.
If he rocks up in Belgrade for that Davis Cup tie, I will be just so brimming with respect and admiration for him. I mean, I think everybody would understand and say, you know what, Andy, it's okay. You've done your bit. Sit this one out. It's all good. But I remember speaking to him in whatever it was, February of this year, and he said it's about the teammates and not letting them down. And that's a very powerful thing for him. We've spoken about, you know, how fiercely protective he is of those around him. That's what brings the best out of him, that instinct. So I think more likely than not, we will see him there. But yeah, getting back to the world number one thing, if he decides that's my next goal, then you've got to start thinking, well, I'm defending champion in Canada. He won it in Montreal last year. What did he get to? Semi-finals in Cincinnati. Less well at the US Open, but that's a goal in itself, the US Open. You've got to be heading to those tournaments and you've got to be trying to win them. No ranking points at the Olympics, I don't think that'll be a factor for him.
Are you sure? Do you not think in a way that you just work out your schedule to preserve your body so that when you play the ones that you do play, you can get as far as you possibly can, including obviously the slams?
Possibly, but the man he's got to catch works out his schedule so that he wins practically every Masters Series event, doesn't he? He's peaking at the slams and at the Masters Series and at everything else he plays. So, yeah, in an ideal world, but and maybe he won't decide that that's his next really big goal. I'm just saying, if he does, it's got to be about trying to win every Masters Series event that he enters.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting. But first things first, got the Wimbledon final tomorrow, Catherine. I get to commentate on it. I get to sit there, courtside, watch it, free, and talk about it. How cool is that? Awesome.
Who are you going to be commentating with?
There's going to be Russell Fuller, my co-commentator for BBC Five Live. We'll be alongside Pat Cash, 1987 champion, and Richard Krajicek, 1996 champion. And, it'll all be on BBC Radio 5 Live. Coverage will start, I don't even know when, about 1 or 1.30, something like that. There's the British Grand Prix tomorrow, you see. So we've got to share the airwaves a little bit with that and the preamble. But eventually it'll be Andy Murray time up against Milos Raonic at 2 o'clock on the dot. I can't wait. Can you?
I remember my secondary school used to hold its school fete on Wimbledon Finals Day every year, and it always used to be the day of Wimbledon Finals, the British Grand Prix, and absolutely nobody used to show up, including all of my family. Why would you do that? Who on earth is going to be doing anything besides, well, mostly watching tennis? I suppose a few people can go watch the
Grand Prix.
Listening. That's what I meant.
Listening. Quite right. Actually, no, but watch it. Have your sound down on your telly, sync up the pictures with the radio, and I'll forgive you. All right? You can do both. Best of both worlds. Anyway, Catherine Whittaker, tomorrow it all happens. Wimbledon, the final. What have you said again? Four sets, was it? Four sets for Andy Murray.
Yeah, I'll go for four sets for Andy Murray, yes. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree. Four sets for Andy Murray. That's what it's going to be, folks. We think.
I just want to make one point that I sort of wish I'd made in a previous podcast, which is that the narrative of all of this with Andy Murray, and if he wins, this will be the narrative, which is that, you know, he didn't have to beat Novak Djokovic. I don't think anybody's suggesting that's a detracting point, but I think he could well have won this one had Djokovic not lost to Sam Querrey in the third round. And there's a small part of me that thinks it's a shame that he's not facing Djokovic in the final.
I certainly think he is in the best position that he could possibly be in to take on Djokovic at his best right now. Djokovic, such an immense player, could go either way if they had done. But I think Murray's playing the best tennis of his life right now.
I agree, and I think that's just what you know, I don't want this, maybe this should be a point to make tomorrow if and when he wins it, but I don't want this to be the one he won when Djokovic wasn't there, because I think there's every chance, I mean, of course, a big question mark, but and we'll never know, it's a sliding doors scenario, but I think there's every chance he could have done it this year with Djokovic here, but we'll never know.
We'll never know. Just a quick one, I guess who I just ran into. Mario Ancic, who was making his first return to Wimbledon since reaching the semi-finals, I think it was semi-finals here in 2008, and he said he walked through the gates and he said I felt really, really emotional about it, because the first couple of years after deciding he would have to retire, he didn't want to come back at all. It was too tough. Now he's a banker, an investment banker in New York, having gone through the college system over there as well, and he's just always been too busy, but my word, it was good to see him.
Isn't he doing a law degree, studying law, something like that?
Yeah, he's just sort of juggling juggling that on the side. You know, that's Marianne. She's a highly intelligent guy.
One of these overachievers sent to the planet to make us all feel bad about ourselves. Great.
Yeah, he's one of those. And also, I got a chance to have a chat with Carlos Moyo a little earlier for BBC TV and Five Live. And I was asking him, what is it like sitting next to John McEnroe watching a tennis match? Because obviously we get to see it through the eyes of McEnroe in the commentary box. And I said, you know, what's he like? And he said he's very intense, and he talks a lot, but he's really uplifting. I think what we're getting from this, and seeing Milos Raonic yesterday as well, I think it reinforced the point that McEnroe is just a feel-good factor to have around. I mean, aside from, as Carlos said, he perhaps is the greatest serve and volleyer of all time. You know, what an asset to have on the team. But he's also just good for the atmosphere.
Well, we felt that at Champions Tour events, haven't we, David? You show up and maybe McEnroe gets into town fashionably late, you know, one day after everyone else, and there is a palpable feeling of lift when he arrives at one of these events and completely brings it to life. I can imagine him having that effect on Team Raonic, as it should be called. Incidentally, did Carlos Moyo confirm that McEnroe is still on that team? Because I've just watched Andy Murray's pre-final press conference where he was asked about the Lendl-McEnroe factor, and he said, well, I heard they'd stopped working together last Sunday. That was his response. So, I mean, nobody seems to know. I know that's what Tim Henman had heard as well, and he sparked the rumours that they'd split. I mean,
I just think that they had a contract that was to run, I think, until the eve of this tournament. But the truth is, John McEnroe clearly still is quite happy to be part of the team, and he's absolutely loving every minute of it. So he's out on the practice court every 5 minutes with him. He's in the player box any chance he can get. I think we can call him part of the team.
Will he be in the player box tomorrow? Big question.
Well, no, because I think he commentates for ESPN television, I believe.
But I have heard that they have a rule in finals that coaches can't call their players matches. Not confirmed, but I've heard that.
Oh, rumours abound. I don't know. I have no idea. But anyway, we will find out tomorrow, won't we, whether Johnny Mack's part of the coaching team.
Sorry, I should point out, obviously he's been calling Milos's matches throughout for ESPN and for BBC. They have a rule in finals.
Just ESPN?
Apparently.
Apparently. Apparently unconfirmed, so, you know, we'll see what we can do tomorrow to stand that up or not. Anyway, Catherine, we are the Tennis Podcast, aren't we? Well, I think it's bedtime, isn't it? Is it bedtime? It's only about 6 in the afternoon. I'm tired. Anyway, the sun will go down soon. One more sleep, folks. One more sleep. And it's the Wimbledon men's singles final. If it's anything like the women's, it's pretty good. We'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.